Mikey, give this pontoon a push, eh? Body, fill in, Mike, we gotta go back!
Hook him with your pole and reel him in.
Okay. 20% a pontoon boat, driven by my buddy Mike. We're fishing out on the basin for alligator walleye pike. Emo brought his TV.
How do you not get just happy when you hear that? It's like one happy song. I think it's a very happy song. I like that song. Okay, that's the Diupers opening up Radio Fishing, and this is Fish and Frank, and this is Radio Fishing. In the seat across from me, we got Robert Hitt over there today. Hello, Robert.
Hello, Frank.
And on the other chair over there, we have Captain Carl. And Captain Carl, KB Backcountry Charter Fishing Guy. What are you doing, Captain?
I don't know. I got a mess.
Are you playing with your widow weeders?
Oh, we got it now.
What is he, 10?
Pretty much.
Okay. I'm looking over there. We're getting ready to start a show. And he's like got cats in the cradle type finger puzzles going with a leader spool.
It was messed up.
Cats in the cradle finger things. I like it. Now you're reaching back there, aren't you?
Yeah, it's not that far back for me, man. I mean, it's a ways back for you. But, you know, the older you get, the less distance between you and your childhood.
I know, it's a good song.
The stuff in the middle you forget about, you know. All right, we are here today to talk about mangrove or gray snappers, red snappers, mutton snappers, schoolmaster snappers, black and wenchman snappers, vermilion snappers, lane snappers, red porgies, triggerfish, sea bass, hogfish, namely any other little species of grunts and snappers that live in deep water out, usually, let's say, Gulf of Mexico area. Because it seems like it really changes a lot if you get from the Gulf of Mexico to the Atlantic or the Pacific. But whether, you know, the snappers, whether it's mutton or gray or whatever, they seem kind of common from here all the way around to Texas.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, the Gulf is kind of the Gulf.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, fish don't know fences, really. They just know temperatures.
So what it is when you go offshore, I think everybody dreams of having that big day out on the water where you've just got, you know, we're going to catch a 1,000-pound grouper, and, you know, we're going to do all that. And I think a much more realistic aspect to bottom fishing in the Gulf of Mexico is thinking about dinner in that 12 to 20-inch size.
Yeah.
10 to 20-inch size.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you think? 10 or 12?
I'm in the middle.
10 inches or 12 inches?
Yeah, we'll go with 12.
You know, 12 to 20, 10 to 20, those are going to be your most common fish.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And it's kind of funny because when you think about bottom fishing, you really think about big grouper and Jewfish or Goliath grouper and, you know, these monsters of the deep. But I think the reality is much more in that 14, 16-inch range.
A lot more tastier for me.
Yeah, I'm going to admit, I like a lot of the snappers and grunts, white grunts, French grunts, the look downs, all that kind of stuff. To me, I think they actually have a better flavor than some of the groupers.
Mm-hmm.
I'll agree with that. I'm not a big grouper fan.
No. Either am I. My dad, he loves grouper, but
I think grouper have a better publicist. I think they have a better PR group.
Oh, there's no doubt about that.
You know, grouper sandwich. I'm going to have grouper sandwich. You know?
Just doesn't sound as great.
I'm going to have a snapper sandwich. Snapper. Yeah. I'm going to have a snapper sandwich.
Yeah. Exactly.
I'd eat them snappers all day long.
Yeah, but you're young. Yeah. Young people tend to do that. For me, he started it. I didn't say it. He did. Wake up, Robert. Come on.
I'm good.
It must be. Never mind. Okay. Let's see. Over the years, At Fish and Franks, we help outfit a lot of different people for a lot of different fishing. And during the course of the show, we're going to be doing freshwater fishing, saltwater fishing, fishing in Florida, Wisconsin, Louisiana, pretty much every state except California. Because I have lead in my system, I'm not allowed to go there. This product may contain substances that deemed by the state of California are harmful. And I'm sure somewhere it'd be there's substances harmful to someone in California.
Yep, probably.
Probably. So any other state, New York, New Jersey, Georgia, you know, Nebraska. I love Nebraska. I've been through there several times. I'm not sure it would be my state to live in. Man, it's a gorgeous state.
Yeah. Never been there.
No, I like that whole section of the plains, you know. You're driving along, and it doesn't look like anything changes. And yet, you know, it looks like everything's flat, but there's like a gully, and 1,000 Indians can be hiding in there waiting to, you know, take your butt out. You know, it's just a cool area. I did cowboy stuff out west, you know, wandered around a lot. All right, let's see. What's your favorite, you know, tasting bottom fish? Is there one that's really got you going?
Personally, I'll take a trigger fish over any of them.
Really?
Mm-hmm. That is by far my favorite fish to eat, period, hands down.
And I love them because they actually have a trigger on them. They don't get the name because they got something that looks like a trigger.
Right.
They got a fin that is a trigger.
Yeah.
You want to explain yourself there, boy?
Well, you explain it. You know better. No. You know the anatomy of them a little bit better than I do.
Go. You pick the fish. Don't try to dump your
you
fish on
me. You just asked
me
what I like to eat. You know, they've got a fin on their top that actually is a mechanism that can actually stand straight.
Is it on top or bottom?
I think on it's top.
It is on the top?
The dorsal fin.
Yep.
Deer.
Oh, okay.
Right on top.
I wish you could have seen that finger.
Yep. Just stands straight up, and it's literally like you can actually take and press one part of it and get it to stand straight up or try to fold it over.
Some reason I had a memory of it on the bottom, but yeah, it's on the top.
Yeah.
See, this happens when you get old.
It's a hard it's a hard spine, and they actually use it for a defense mechanism to prevent being eaten.
But after all these millions of years, would the other fish kind of come up and go, oh, look at this, pink, and all the fins fold down flat and he can be eaten?
Probably.
Sure, it's happened a couple of times.
You know, but they are a tricky fish to catch because even a 4-pound trigger fish, they got a little tiny mouth. They're really, really exceptionally good bait thieves. And with Florida's law now on them,
they got little tiny mouths, so they're exceptionally good bait to use?
No.
Thieves.
Bait thieves.
Oh, bait thieves. All right. I'm sorry. I can't hear. Robert can't see. That's why we hang out together. It's Richard Pryor and whatever the other guy's name was, you know, the weird guy's
name. Gene Wilder.
Gene Wilder. Yep. So.
You know, they're a fascinating little fish. I mean, their primary diet is eating little crustaceans around corals and nooks and crannies, so their mouth is literally like a tiny little beak for digging in little cracks to grab little shrimp and baby crabs and stuff like
Didn't
that.
Didn't their teeth kind of form together, and it kind of looks more like the beak of a parrot than actual fish?
Yeah, similar, yeah, absolutely.
Kind of like a puffer or something.
Yeah, similar. They're pretty fascinating. They're very slow swimming fish. That's another reason why they're tricky to catch, because a lot of your other little guys that are down there, I call them hobber dobbers, because it's just broad spectrum little guys. They're much faster and more aggressive than the triggerfish are. So, but almost every species of triggerfish, from what I'm aware of, pretty much tastes the same and kind of feeds the same way. There are some varieties in Hawaii that actually gather in big schools around some of the fads that they have located out there. And if you don't know what a fad is, it's what they call a fish attracting device. It's giant.
I'm thinking California, Hawaii. Fad. Okay, well, you could go out, and if you wear the blue, I'll wear the pink.
No.
Gray is the new black.
No.
Okay.
No.
It's just wrong.
It's basically a giant cement column that they will drop down in the bottom with a big cable attached to it. And sometimes it's a buoy that comes right to the surface. But in other instances, it's actually smaller buoys at different points on that cable, and it only comes part way to the surface. So it's providing a vertical structure in the water column that will attract all sorts of species of fish. So that's pretty cool. You know, out there you'll find them, but they're found globally. But most of them are private. It's weird. There's actually a company that actually will put them
out. I want everybody to know me, but I don't want anybody to know my real name.
Right. They're all over the place. And there's a company that actually will do them for you that charges a pretty significant amount of money, but they put them out all over the world.
Think of somebody does the same thing in the Gulf of Mexico up by Louisiana, Mississippi up there. They've got a lot of little companies that make these. They're miniature reefs, not actually miniature. They're actually pretty big. But they're one piece, and the company goes out, drops them onto the bottom, and that's your private fishing spot. Only you know where the numbers are. Until somebody finds it, then you can call them up, and they charge you to move it to a new spot.
Right.
But that's real common in the northern Gulf of Mexico, Mississippi, Alabama area up in there. You know, you got to have some money to do this, but they actually do that here in the Gulf of Mexico as well. They kind of look, in a weird way, like a Christmas tree. They've got a base on them, and then they come up more to a point. And I've seen several of them. They're actually really cool.
Gotcha.
I like to find a couple out there.
Well, and people got to realize, like, the Gulf of Mexico.
I got to tell you, in South Florida, they're way too cheap. It's two washing machines in the back of the boat.
That's why they call it Florida. But no, the thing that people got to realize about the Gulf of Mexico, who aren't familiar with it, but especially in the more southwestern part of Florida.
Master, you tell us what we need to know.
It's basically a big bowl. It's super shallow, very limited on structure.
Oh, I need a haircut. Give me a bowl.
Limited on structure, limited on ledges, limited on all of that. So it's basically a big desert oasis around here. So what you're looking for is any little bit of structure is going to be prime real estate. Once you get up towards the Panhandle and all of the states up there in the northern part of the Gulf of Mexico, they've got a lot deeper ledges, much closer to them than what we have. I mean, what they've got 10 miles offshore is equivalent to what we have 100 miles offshore. So a big difference of style of fishing here.
And they got the oil rigs, which is awesome. I think if the government mandated they had like three of those big cleanup boats with the centrifuge turbines in them, I would love to see them put as many oil rigs off the Gulf Coast, out of sight of land, but anything they wanted to do out there. The fishing around those things is phenomenal.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And, you know, if they had the centrifuge rigs on the boats the way other countries do, we're the only major country that doesn't have them. Every other country's got them. And they just go around, suck up their oil. If it gets, you know, they have a spill, they just go around, suck it all up and filter it out of the water and put it in a barge and haul it back home. And I don't know why we don't have them. We still use oil rags. Yes.
Yes. I know. Cheap.
I mean, oh my God. Yeah. The greatest country on earth. Mm-hmm. And we just got a few really weird people running it. Okay.
So what would be one of your favorite fish for out there?
Me? I'm just more of a plain old, like, grunts. You know, I like lane snappers because they're real mild. But they're not a particularly big fish, but any kind of real grunts, lane snappers, they're very colorful, they're small fish, but really tasty. But you're going to clean a lot of them. How about you, Carl?
Mine's even smaller. I like them little vermilions.
Oh, really?
Them things are tasty. I just wish they got a lot bigger.
Wouldn't have to clean so many.
Yeah, I mean, they're very, very tasty. And to be honest, you also lose a lot of them on the way up. A lot of other fish like to eat them. Like grouper love them. I've had a lot of stolen by grouper over the years. But those things are very, very tasty, but they don't get very big, so you do have to get into a bunch of them.
Now, as far as snappers go, you only allowed 10 snappers of any species on the boat. total. Per person.
Correct.
So if you got like two lanes and eight mangrove snappers, you're done with the snappers. Now, does that snapper thing does not include the grunts, I don't think.
I don't think it includes lane snapper either.
Yeah, I don't think lane
snapper. Lane snapper is not under that. It's 100 pounds.
Yes.
I'm almost positive it's one of those that is not on the list.
Yeah, golf, 100 pounds per harvester, not included with snapper aggregate.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, it's weird.
Now, the vermilion snapper is not included with the snapper bag limit either.
Nope.
Right. Vermilion and
that's why you got to catch a bunch of them.
Yeah. They got a 12-inch size limit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, once you get out in the Gulf.
Or 10-inch in the Gulf.
10 inches in the Gulf until you hit federal waters. 9 miles out, they have to be 12, don't they? On mangroves and all the other mangroves. Mm-hmm. Like mangrove snapper, they have to be 12 inches. It's okay. Weird. Florida has a lot of confusing state and federal laws.
Yeah. Why aren't we just mirroring the federal laws?
I don't know. Because they're both morons.
Yeah. I mean,
honestly, it's just flip a coin, but pick one or the other, but don't have two separate ones.
Yeah, because on the Atlantic side of Florida, you go out 3 miles, you're in federal water. On the Gulf Coast of Florida, you go out 9 miles to get to federal waters.
Yeah. No, it doesn't make sense. Yeah. I know.
Okay. We will shake our head and go, Florida. All right. The whole thing, you're the vermilion. What kind of rod, Carl, would you want to go out and catch those snappers?
Typically when I'm going out there, you know, I'm going to bring a rod just strong enough to also catch grouper, because when you're sitting there catching those little snappers and stuff, you're going to hook into a grouper every now and then. I like to use my Penn Battalions of 15 to 30, 7 foot action, you know, with a 5,000 clash on it.
All right, you're using a 15 to 30 with a 5,000 clash. But when I was looking at jigging sticks to do this with, and I was picking the 8130 for just kind of general bottom fishing with a 6,000. I like the slammer, okay? It's a little lighter weight, but the Rampage JG 801 130 S60. To me, that's a very short rod at 6 foot, and I can put that 5 or 6,000 slammer on it. I'm probably usually going to go to 6, but I like the live liner so too, and so I want to put a 6,500 live liner under, I guess, to be lightweight. If I thought I was really going to hold it all day, I'd probably go to the slammer, but to tell you the truth, I pretty much usually put the live liners on them, because if I set it in the rod holder, I want to flick the live liner switch and not have all that
pressure
on it. It's
a very, very great option.
But it's a pretty stout rod for those. But the only reason I like that is, I mean, it's literally a grouper rod. I mean, I can drag big grouper up with that. This thing's got a tremendous amount of power for a spinning setup. As far as spinning setups, I'd say that'd be one of the most powerful ones you could use. But it's really not as much fun with those snappers and grunts and stuff like that. I think you might have the better choice in that for as far as having fun.
Yeah, I like that Penn Battalion, the 15 to 30. It's the S70. Like I said, either with a 5,000 or 6,000 clash on it. I'm probably running 65-pound Suffolk braid on there. You know, just in case you do hook into something a little bit better, because you don't have control sitting there dropping all the way to the bottom, what bites your bait.
Yeah, well, you never know. Robert, you got a favorite rod that you're into?
Well, I mean, for the general within 25 miles where I'm going to be primarily just targeting 100% the snappers and the grunts and borgies, basically the small fish, I'm going to go with that Battalion in a 12 to 20 7-foot rod. With probably my 3,000 or 4,000 series clash with...
It would have to be a 4. That 12 to 20. If you're using a 10 to 20...
It depends on what I have at the house. Because, I mean, honestly, I'm not going to have 5 different rods and reels. I don't do enough of that offshore stuff. So I'm going to kind of hodgepodge some of my own personal stuff.
Well, I kind of like your choice of the 12 to 20. Because 12 to 20 is that... tweener rod. It's not heavy, It's not a bottom fishing rod. It's not a shark rod. It's, again, it's not like a 8 to 17 or a 10 to 20 or 6 to 12. That's kind of a normal fishing pole. It's not really big enough to be a big fish rod, and it's not light enough to be a normal fish rod.
Right.
It's that, you know, I like that 12 to 20 for cobia, as well as all that. I could see it being a good snapper rod.
Now, well, it's got a fast enough action on it, so it's still got a sensitive enough tip, and since I'm only going to be using 20-pound, I'm going to use the Spiderwire Invisibraid on mine. You know, I might bump it up to 30-pound on that, but 20-pound on that with that softer tip, it's just sensitive enough where I'd be able to feel it right, and that's what I'd be primarily targeting with that closer to shore stuff.
Now, the 12 to 20, that's got the bigger grip on it. It's got that big oversized guide clamps, and that's why I was thinking you'd want to put a 4,000 in there. But like you say, why spend all that money on another reel? I mean, I think in an ideal world, I'd have a 3,500 or a 4,500 spin fisher on there, because I mean, monster drags, tough, bag of rocks, and it has that, you know, the drag washers are not up in the little part of the spool. They're not in the pinched part of the hourglass. If you look a spool empty, you see it kind of looks like an hourglass, bigger on both ends, got a little spot in the middle. Most of the drag washers are in there. They kind of drill down into it's thunder booming here. You know, they drill down in, and then they drop the main shaft comes through, and the drag washers are in that little part of it. What they do with the spin fishers, those drags are on the bottom of it. They're like five times the size of normal drag washers. Right. So much more power. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I to me, a 35 or a 4,500 spin fisher on something like that would be just amazingly, that'd be a good choice. I'm really kind of surprised at that one. All right. Not that yours was bad, Carl.
I like to get my fish up.
Yeah. All right. Batter up. Batter, batter, batter. Swing batter. All right. One right off the left post center field. All right. Let's see. Getting into it, how do you guys like to rig up? We're talking about snappers here. What's the rig up on the snappers?
For natural bait purposes?
Yeah, let's talk about natural bait.
Me, personally, I'm going to do a porgy rig, a.k.a. chicken rig, double drop rig. It's a rig of basically multiple names. But, you know, it's basically essentially your sinker, or your, I'm going to use a AFW, just regular barrel swivel, to connect to my main line. And then I'm going to use about 4 feet of 25-pound test to make this rig.
So now you're using the High Seas fluorocarbon? You like triple fish? What do you like?
I use the High Seas fluorocarbon.
All right.
I like it. And then basically what I'm going to do is about 6 inches to 12 inches below my swivel, I'm going to make a loop. And then about a foot below that, I'll make another loop. And then on the very bottom, I'm going to make another loop.
Okay, so you got three loops on it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Robert's officially loopy.
Yep, officially. You
know? Oh, yeah.
He's a little loopy over there. Now, I understand that the loop up by the swivel and the one right below it, those would be for hooks.
Correct. And it's all it is a sling. With those loops, I'm taking and pinching it and sliding the hook eye through my doubled up loop, and then just sliding it over the shank of the hook so it's going to cradle it and just hold on to it. But the bottom loop is probably the one that you're kind of questioning, and the reason why I do a loop on the bottom of it is to actually hold my sinker on.
I thought we had established it was for the purposes of loopy.
No, it's the purpose of having a sinker. Because with this rig, that sinker is on the bottom. I feel the bites better because some of these fish are very subtle and very good bait thieves. So by having that sinker on the bottom, the fish are it kind of levels the playing field a little bit more. I know them; they're there at the same time as they know I'm there. But when traveling from point A to point B, I don't have a sinker hanging there slapping around. I can just take it right off and just attach my hooks to the rod so it's a little safer and out of the way. Or because every area is a little bit different with your current and your tides and wind that day, I can interchange any size sinker I want very quickly.
Now, in order to get these quick change sinkers, you're putting a loop in the bottom and kind of making like a square knot, which ends up in a loop. And so you go through about three times and then the loop. And then you get a bank sinker on there, B-A-N-K, the bank sinker, which allows you to put the line through because they have that big hole at the top.
Correct.
And you can easily change. You put the end of the loop through there, loop it over the sinker. If you want to get it off, just unloop it.
Yep.
Yeah,
so it is a loopy kind of situation, but it's convenient.
All right. Now, I'm big on the VMC circle hooks. Any particular circle hook you like?
Well, because I honestly don't like circle hooks at all.
Well, I hate circle hooks, but if I'm going to use them, I pretty much go to the VMC.
Yeah, Florida law says you have to use inline circle hooks in conjunction with natural bait. So therefore, I'm gonna stick with the VMC. It's the 7387 tournament circle hooks. You know, and I'm going to stick with a number 1/0. And the reason why I'm saying the size is because everyone's got their favorite brand of circle hooks. And VMCs are very, very similar to a regular 1/0 J-hook, which J-hooks are fairly standardized across the board with all of your companies. But when you get into circle hooks, every company is totally different. So that's why I'm a little more partial to the VMCs.
Well, I picked the exact same thing, but I'll get into what I did. But I didn't get the exact same thing. I got very close. Let's go it that way. Carl, what's your favorite bottom rig for these snappers, grunts, porgies, whatever, the dinner fish?
Well,
ring the dinner bell. How are you going to get dinner?
When I'm going out there, especially because when I go out there for a meat run. I don't like to waste a lot of time. I like to keep stuff simple. I use these little weights that have the swivels on each end.
Yeah,
that's
an egg sinker, yep. Kind of a round-looking weight, has a brass ring on each end with a swivel already attached to it.
On both sides. The way I do it, I use High C's fluorocarbon. I like the multicolor just because I feel like one solid color in the water, you know, the fish might pick up on that. So I like to use that multicolor leader everywhere I go. But I use about 2 feet down from my weight. Because I tend to see if I go any longer than that, it's going to swing up my line. It's going to twist up on the line above the weight. And then you have a lot of tangles and everything like that. So I use about 2 feet underneath my weight. You know, and I'm using same hook that you guys were talking about, the tournament grade VMC. But I use like a 2/0. I like the little bit bigger hook.
Yeah, that's all right. So what you're doing is you're coming down in your main line and you're tying it to one side of your sinker, and then you tie your leader material to the bottom side of it, and you want to end up with about 2 feet between your sinker and your hook.
Yes. Yeah, I notice if I go any longer of leader than that, it will twist up on me, and then it's just not fun. Fish aren't going to hit it right. You're not going to feel them right. So I use about 2 feet. And if I do have to change, you know, different size weights or whatever, it's very easy. You know, you can just snip off the main line to your weight, grab a different weight, and I already have these pre-made like in a tackle box coming off to the hook, so it's very easy to switch them out.
All right,
that's a pretty good idea. I like that.
Robert was passing me a note because we've got a big storm coming. He's worried about losing power, and this is a pre-recorded show. Recorded right here at Studio F, downtown Charlotte Harbor, Florida.
Studio but F, I like that.
Yeah. But we don't actually have any way to do that, Robert. This is, we're going, and if it goes, it just kind of, we lose it all.
Okay.
So, just to let you and the listeners know, we'll tell you if we have to do take two, but
no problem.
There's none of that. You know, it's not like I'm typing and I can save it.
Okay. Yeah. All right, I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
That's why you're behind that board. I'm just supposed to remind stuff once in a while in case you forget.
Yeah. You know, when you go out there, you do want to bring different size weights. You know,
that's
for
what
how,
I was going to ask
how
you.
How deep you are.
What size weights you guys are in?
I'm using like a 2 to a 3, you know, sometimes a 1. It all really depends on how deep you are and the current that, you know, that's in the area. If you notice that when you're dropping your bait and it's going away from the boat, you're going to have to, you know, add more weight to it. If it's going straight down, then your weight's good, and you might also be able to lighten it up just a little bit to feel the hits a little better.
Yeah, and because you know we all seem to agree on using braided line for this lighter tackle, that light braided line of that 20-30 pound test cuts through the water super easy, more so than mono. So a lot of times you can get away with half the amount of lead that you would have normally used with monofilament. You know, so for me personally, I've got anywhere from a half ounce up to about 3 ounces when I'm staying within, you know, let's say no deeper than 60 feet of water, because that's going to stay pretty vertical at some point with any of those sizes for me. If I go into the heavier line and heavier leader, there's obviously going to be more line drag, so I have to go up sizes. But for my lighter tackle stuff, I've almost never had to use more than 3 ounces. No. But that half ounce to about 2 ounces have been mostly ideal for me.
You know, another thing that I've noticed is if you're in line with like a pass, there's going to be a lot more current, you know, when you're out offshore than as if you're not lined up in a pass. So you might have to use more weight when you're, you know, in that path of that current coming out of those passes.
Because if there's a pass where you've got a large body of water passing between two islands, it literally draws water through there because of the water can't get through the islands. So as it goes through there, and if you're in line with that out, it's hard to believe how much suction or push a pass can do, even sometimes when you're 12, 15 miles out.
Oh, absolutely. It can really affect it significantly.
Because you can go through and, you know, they talk about rip currents. And it's kind of that way, but it's just the way the water moves as, you know, it's being either trying to get in a pass and it's sucking it out of the Gulf, or if you're outside a pass and it's trying to just add more water out there, it big difference.
Okay.
But one of the things that I think about is most of the time when I'm using, and I'm using all spinning tackle for my snappers and stuff. Mm-hmm. You guys doing this, it's all spinning,
I'm
right?
Spinning.
Yeah,
yes.
Same thing.
What I kind of like to do is I'm in that 1 to 2 ounce range, and I'm using a 3-aught, by the way, VMC. Okay. Robert's using the 1, you're using the 2, I'm using the 3. Okay. There's a lot of good circle looks out in the market. I guess I like the VMC stuff.
Yeah, VMC, they're a great hook. I mean, that's what I mainly use.
But one of the things about this is it has to be an inline where the point of the hook points dead back at the shank of the hook. If you lay it on a table, it can't wobble. Now, mind you, the eye has to be off the edge of the table, but if the 90% of the hook is on the table and you have the eye hanging off, there should be no wobble to that hook. Easy way to tell it's inline.
Aren't all brands saying tournament?
It has to say non-offset or tournament.
Yep.
But if I'm out there, one of the things I like to do with spinning rod is actually cast away from the boat. I do, you know, I kind of do an underhand flip thing, and, you know, I can usually get it out there 30-some feet away from the boat, and because I'm on a spinning rod, I leave my bail open until I'm certain it's on the bottom. Big mistake people make is they'll do one of these neat cast things, goes way out from the boat, like 40 feet, you're in 60 feet of water, they close the bail, and their bait never hits the bottom because there's not enough line left. So when I'm tossing out, I want to make sure that bail stays open so it'll actually fall and drop exactly where it hit from the water. It'll just go straight down if your bail's open. If your bail's closed, it's going to come back to you. It's a big pendulum on a swing.
Yep.
But I let it go down, hit the bottom, give it a second there, and then I can kind of pop it a little bit, let it hit back on the bottom, get a little notice of it. And to me, that seems to be one of my favorite ways. If I'm dropping straight down, getting a fish, bring them back up, and I can just boom, boom, do that, boom, boom, then obviously that's wonderful. But a lot of times in order to get these fish and to get on the bite, I'm chunking it out away from the boat and kind of bounce it and let it sit for a while, and then I'll bounce it and let it sit, always getting it to work back closer to me. Is that something you guys ever do?
Well, I do that regularly, and especially depending on where the chum bag is placed on the boat, because a lot of times we are using a chum bag out there. You know, if it's tied off to the back cleat off the transom, where most people tie it off to because it's convenient and easy, your chum is a long ways behind you before it's reaching that reef. A lot of time it's past the reef before it's getting all the way down to the bottom. So casting that bait out there where I'm more in line with that chum slick as it's sinking down is a little bit more beneficial to me personally.
Yeah.
I like putting it off the bow of the boat because then it's sinking a little bit faster, because you tend to be anchored really close to on top of the structure. You know, and I want it to get down there right on top and bring those fish up.
Can you guys hear that thunder out there?
Oh, yeah. It's a pretty good one coming. It's
Florida afternoon.
Yeah. We're in a trailer. Okay. Let's see. I'm kind of thinking, yeah, but now when I'm snapper fishing and I want to use chum, what I do is I put like 5 pounds of weight on a chum bag. I drop it straight down to the bottom. I get it on the bottom. I leave it down there. I shake it a little bit, probably 10, 15 minutes if the bite's doing good. And then I bring it up about 5, 10 feet. And then 10, 15 minutes later, I bring it up another 5 to 10 feet. And I keep working it up towards the surface. Because as you said, when if you're chumming right off the boat, you know, right at surface height, by the time that chum hits the bottom, it's way off of the reef. Mm-hmm. So I want to get that chum kind of right where I want to fish, dropping it straight down, getting that area kind of stirred up. And then by picking it up, it gets it to drift a little further and pick it up again. And it's going to drift further away and pick it up again and get it to drift further away. So I'm getting, in my mind, I think I'm getting a much better coverage because it's already really good right below me. And then it's kind of getting it out. So I'm kind of bringing those fish in, letting that chum get a little bit more, a little bit more. And because it's not that high on my first and second lifts, I'm still chumming right below it. So I'm still getting some chum on where I want. And then as it comes up, the chum actually goes further afield, further away, can bring in fish from farther, because I already caught a lot of these right below me. I need some new victims here. You know, I want some, you know, new blood, new meat, you know. Hey, Bubba, new meat here. All right. As far as rigs go, I'm kind of along with you guys, but I do it. I'm a little different. What I do is I take my line off my fishing pole, and if I'm just using a regular spinning rod or if I've got my heavy duty rig, either one, but I put a sinker through it. Now with something like that Rampage 80 to 130, I'm gonna start with at least 2 ounces on it, because I got 50 or 60 pound test on it, 50 to 65 braid. I'm either going to use Invisibraid or I'm going to use the Suffix, that blue camo, that offshore camo they got. Kind of, if I had two rods, I'd put one, a little bit of each on each, because I kind of like the blue camo because it's camo, you know, different colors. I like having different colors, mixing up the view. But the Invisibraid does pretty good, especially after it gets fuzzy, because it seems to be more translucent in the water. I like to rough it up good and make sure the Invisibraid is nice and fuzzy, and that really seems to work. But I put my line through the sinker, regular egg sinker, and run my line through it, tie it off to my swivel. Now, one time I don't go cheap. I go a little bit more. I use an AFW number 3 5-piece ball bearing swivel, the one with the welded rings on it. And what I like about this ball bearing swivel is it actually swivels under pressure. So if I'm reeling stuff up, it helps me from getting tangled up, and that reduces twist, and it actually works. It's a real swivel and it actually swivels. 99% of all swivels don't swivel once you put any, even 1 ounce of pressure on them. And now I'm going to 40 pound and I'm using a triple fish leader, and it's 40 pound fluorocarbon. And what I like about it is I can tie, when I put the line through my sinker, tie my swivel to it, and then on the other side I can just tie my leader from there to my hook. And I'm like Carl, I'm using pretty short, 2-3 feet, because if I drop it down, it starts to helicopter, it's a nightmare. Mm-hmm. It'll just wrap around itself. But what I do differently is from the swivel over the top of the egg sinker about there, I put a split shot, not as a weight, but as a stopper, because my sinker's sliding up and down the line, kind of like Roberts, his hooks are above the weight, with the weight already down on the bottom and the hooks above it. As those fish pull, you feel it right away. The only thing about Carl's rig is he catches a lot of fish, so it can't be wrong. But I feel the fish is biting, and then he's got to kind of pull that big sinker across the bottom before you know he's there. So I'm not as good as Carl sometimes. Carl, he actually understands that. If I'm fishing that rig, I actually try and hold it off the bottom a little bit so you can feel the bite. Now, with my rig,
the bottom reel up a couple reels.
Yeah, my rig, I just let the line slide right through the egg sinker, and that way I'm going to feel every little hit because they don't have to move that sinker around for me to hit them. So with yours, Carl, you're actually doing what I do when you fish that, and that's once the sinker's on the bottom, tighten up, try and lift it about a foot, half a foot off the bottom.
Yep. So I usually do tell them, especially on those class reels, I think it's almost 3 feet per turn or something like that.
Pretty close.
So that's why I say just do one reel up and you'll be off the bottom fine enough.
Oh, yeah, because with a 2 foot leader, three feet off the bottom, you're right there. But with the slip sinker rig that I use, I kind of like that. I'm using the ball bearing swivel, and I don't really think I have to, but I just really prefer the ball bearings because they actually do what they're supposed to. They actually swivel. And even the AFW metal on metal ones don't swivel under a load. They swivel fine if you don't have any load on them. But I don't know. I guess it's kind of six of one, half dozen the other. Whatever you like, however you feel, you're going to do that. Let me see. My note here. A while back, we had a law about venting tools.
Correct.
All right. Now, did you guys ever use the venting tools?
I have used them.
Yes. I knew Rich Novak, who invented the venting tool. And they would give them away for free until they got together with the T-shirt painter guy and some other celebrities who convinced the state you had to use a venting tool, you had to do circle hooks. And, boy, if I could find that guy, I'd like to smack him one.
Right.
I mean, there had to be money in it for these people.
A lot.
Yeah, had to be a lot of money in this. And because you had to use a certain D-hooker, a certain hook, come on.
And I agree with the venting tool to an extent, but you do need to be educated on using that venting tool. And even some of the other descending gear.
You almost don't want to believe that the American public in general, you give them this big hypodermic needle with a hole in it and tell them to poke the fish with it, that they would literally stab it like they're in the movie Psycho. Just stab. Oh, I got the air out of it. Now I'm going to release it in intact. Get something with a 3-inch spike on it. You run it through the side of the fish for its benefit. No, sorry. That one's a little hard for me to even consider as possible.
You want my own personal witness to something of ridiculous was being on a headboat, fishing the middle grounds, and watching the mate take about, I don't know, let's put it this way. It was, even if it would have been in season, it was an undersized red snapper, and he drilled the side of it with a pair of pliers and then threw it back in the water and said, oh, it's vented. So people do some very ridiculous stuff out there.
Hard for me to even fathom that. I mean, I don't get it. I
watched them do it, and I don't get it, and I think people are idiots for doing it. But, I mean, done properly, venting tools can be absolutely amazing, but you do have to know how to use them because you can damage yourself or the fish if not properly used.
Wow. Carl, have you gone out where they do those drop things to release fish?
It's like a BOGO grip type thing.
Well,
it's a
Robert's
descending gear.
Yeah, Robert's been on a lot of descending gear trips with people, scientists and biologists and stuff. What's the difference between using a venting tool and descending gear?
Well, a venting tool is more realistic for the general public that goes out because it's a heck of a lot cheaper. Most of your descending gear that they have out there, it goes onto a rope. It's got a lip holding, basically, device with a weight on it. You drop them down to depth and the air compresses back down to where it should be. That fish is ready to go and you give it a yank and that locking jaw mechanism unlocks basically like a BOGO grip and pops that fish loose. And since that air compressed back down, he's ready to swim away and swims away just fine.
Does it work? You know,
it does work. It does work. But the average cost of one of those descending devices starts about $60. There All are right. a couple of cheaper wire ones with lead on them. I've even seen some guys that have made their own with by filing the barb off of a circle hook and putting a sinker just above it, almost like a jig head, and doing a J action with their rod, being able to slide that hook out of a fish's mouth while dropping it back down to depth.
All right, now, what I want to know is, how do you know it works?
Yeah.
They videoed quite a bit and had divers down there to watch them for a couple different hours observing to see how well
all of
it
works. Okay, so somebody's actually gone down and looked at this.
Yeah.
Because I'm sitting here thinking, okay, I'm up in the boat, let them go. They didn't come to the top, so, yeah, they're good, they live.
Yeah.
What?
A lot of it was in theory for quite some time, but then they actually had to prove that it was actually working because there was so many people like that last deal where somebody profited from it, making this law out of BS, they actually had to really start to prove that these things were beneficial to the fish.
Because, I mean, I don't see the benefit of the circle hook, the J hook, you know what I mean?
Right.
One, sometimes you should be using one, sometimes probably the other. But I thought that whole law was just putting money in people's pockets. Mm-hmm. The T-shirt guy got together with that hook removal tool company, and those tools got the law passed.
Yeah, and they all profited from it.
Yeah, those are all about money. And it, you know, if you got somebody famous saying, oh, this is great, I don't know why people suck up to famous people.
I don't know.
I blow them off if they're not nice. I don't care.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, what do I care if you're a famous TV fishing personality or if you paint stuff on T-shirts? What do I care? I either like you or I don't.
Right.
You know, I mean, you guys have seen that with me plenty of times. I like you or I don't.
Yep.
Definitely not going to suck up to you because, oh boy, you're more famous.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. All right, let's go on to marker buoys.
Okay.
Greatest thing.
By far. All
right, Carl.
They're amazing when you're offshore, you mean, because not everybody likes to anchor. Not everybody has a trolling motor with anchor mode on them. You know, some people like to drift while they're out there. And you get out to your areas and you start fishing, well, your screen lights up, everybody's rod bends over with a fish. You know, instead of trying to guess on where you were or go back to your track, you could just grab this little marker ball buoy, throw it over the side of the boat, and with the weight that's on it, it unwinds and goes all the way to the bottom.
So you get about, you know, anywhere from a pound to 5 pounds of lead.
Yeah, he's about
tied to a string, and then on the top of it, you've got a marker buoy. I tend to use laundry detergent jugs. I like the old Tide and Era because it has a handle on it, so I can tie my string to that. But you can wrap the twine around that laundry detergent jug, and it doesn't crush it.
Yeah.
Milk jugs, bleach bottles, they tend to get crushed when you wrap the line around them. Tends to mess them all up.
Yeah, I got the one with the flag on it, with the handle, crank it.
Yeah, but I'm cheap, and that thing's like $100. Yeah, it's over $100 nowadays.
But if you're going offshore, it's 100% worth it. I mean, because you just throw that over the side of the boat once you start marking fish and catching fish.
Now, here's the difference between youth and old. It's only $100. I throw it over the side of the boat.
Yes.
I'm throwing it in the water.
Sometimes it
care.
Gets hard to find. If you start drifting too far away from it.
Yeah, that would, you know.
But once you throw it over the side of the boat, you could either come back and set up another drift to where you drift right past your ball again, or you could come back and set up anchor on those fish that you threw the marker ball over on. I mean, it's 100%. I won't leave dock without it if I'm rowing offshore.
All right, Robert?
I agree with it. I mean, all that is perfect. The only trick that I do when using a marker buoy, whether it's a homemade one or that expensive one, is
steel.
Where my sinker is attached to the bottom, I use about 3 feet of cable attached to a swivel to the bottom of my rope of my marker buoy. So that way when I throw it out and it goes down to the bottom, the current's going to be naturally moving around, the wave action's going to be bobbing up and down. Well, that sinker usually gathers in structure because that's why those fish are there. if that rope is just tied right to your sinker, it can chafe right through your rope, and next thing you know, your buoy floats away and is gone. So having a couple feet of steel for abrasion resistance right around that structure pretty much guarantees that I'm going to get my thing back. Or I'm not out there drifting around trying to follow my buoy marker that is no longer on the spot.
It's just moving? Yeah. I've lost a couple like that before.
Yeah.
So. All right. So what Robert does, he puts his, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 pounds of lead on, and then he puts a 3 feet or 4 feet of steel leader on, and then ties his string to that. Yep. And now your string should only be, you know, if you're on the Gulf of Mexico in Southwest Florida, I make them up 40, 60, and 100 feet long. If I go a little further south, I'm eliminating, I might do a 40 and then jump right to 80 foot. Mm-hmm. And up in the northern Gulf, I mean, I don't know how much 60 they've got up there. Usually it's like 40 in the deep.
Yeah, pretty much.
So it's got to be a little longer than the depth of the water. If you're out there in 100 feet of water and you got 60 feet of string tied to that, it's going way down there.
Yes. Never to be found again.
Yeah, you'll be yelling at Jacques Cousteau to come get your buoy. So,
or hope you're really good with casting a trouble hook to try to find it.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, usually doesn't think that's work out. Happen.
Usually doesn't. All right. But I've sat there and watched guys try. It's funny.
All right. Is it possible, like, throw jigs for snappers and grunts and stuff? Carl, do you ever use any jigs out there?
Yeah. I mean, you could use a lot of different type of jigs with artificial, you know, connected to them.
Now, do you have to put, what do you mean, like a jig head or like a bucktail jig, or what are you talking about?
Well, the thing about the, here goes that funny thing about the law again. One, if you're using artificials, you could use a J-hook. But if you're using live bait, you have to use a circle, the inline circle hook. What I do is I like to use these Rockport rattlers because they have a built-in, you know, rattle inside, and that makes a big difference. These weights, you know, most of the time I do have to add like a regular egg sinker onto the top of it that slides up and down my line just to get it down there a little faster, because they have, I mean, you could get them all the way up to a half ounce weight, but most of the time you're in deeper water than that. So I like to use the pink, you know, 2-aught hook on them. And don't laugh at me now, but I use the big gulp eels.
I was going to say, you're telling me not to laugh at you. You didn't say what it was going to be for. I'm like 50-50 on that, Carl.
I like to use these big gulp eels. I'm not putting the whole thing, of course, on there, but I'm just cutting little pieces. And gulp, you know, this is the biggest gulp that they make, so I get a lot more pieces of bait off of these. I just cut
so
a little.
So how long are the pieces of eel that you're putting
I'm
on
just
it?
Cutting a little quarter to half inch piece on, putting them on the hook and dropping it down there and bouncing, you know, that Rockport rattler with that rattle down there on the bottom.
Now what about like these? These are the gulp.
Those work great too. It's just they're not as big. You don't get as many.
Right. It's a swimming mullet, but I put those on. Now I usually use the swimming mullet, these little, and these are the smaller ones. These are the 4-inch. And what I like to do is I use a bucktail jig. And with the bucktail jig, I put the, and it looks to me, they say it's a swimming mullet, but it's another stupid name. It's literally a curl tail grub. And I put that on the back of a bucktail jig, and I like doing it that way. I mean, I think the gulp work really good. Because if you put squid, sardines, shrimp, anything on a jig, that's illegal. Yep. You got to use circle hooks out there, unless you throw an artificial. But because gulp is not a live or natural bait, you're allowed to use it.
Yeah, the one thing, the reason why I use these ones, and I just put little pieces on there, because if I usually drop down that little gulp curly tail, and then the next thing you know, the tail's gone. And then more of the tail's gone.
Well, guys, you know, we get talking, kind of running around, and kind of forgot what time it is. But one thing I want you to know, tons of great fishing out there in the Gulf. Say goodbye, Robert.
Goodbye, Robert.
Say goodbye, Captain Carl.
Goodbye, everybody.
Wow, what a day. It's just a great day for drinking beer, having fun, telling lies. I think we're kind of good at that stuff.